Ladies and gentlemen, your conference call is about to begin. Here is your moderator, Raymond Ibrahim.
Thank you, and welcome to another Middle East Forum conference call. Our speaker today is Megdi Khalil, an Egyptian-American human rights activist based in Washington, D.C. He's a famous face on Arabic satellite TV and has appeared on programs such as Al Jazeera and Daring Question, where I personally enjoy watching him, and is the most prominent person today dealing with what has come to be known as the Coptic question, essentially what is happening to the Coptic peoples living in Egypt. And he's here with us today to discuss that question. Thank you for joining us, Megdi. Please begin.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, honorable members of the board of directors and the researcher of the Middle East Forum, thank you for inviting me to speak about the situation of the Copts, the Christians in Egypt, as at your distinguished center. A brief overview of the situation in Egypt is necessary if we wish to address the particular details of the situation of and persecution of Copts in Egypt. Egypt under Mubarak is a country beset by autocracy, corruption, religious extremism, increasing police state characteristics, and overpopulation, which explains why it ranks low in international reports. According to the International Bank report, Egypt ranked number 123 among the world's countries in human progress, and number 126 out of 134 countries in education. Egypt also hold the 111th place in transparency reports, which indicates a very serious level of corruption. 42% of Egyptians survive on a less than a dollar daily income, and 30% are illiterate. The Freedom House reports consistently classify Egypt's status as not free. When it comes to religious freedoms, the Pew Forum on Religion and Public Life, a report issued in December 1609, indicates that Egypt ranked number 5 among the worst countries of the world, right after Saudi Arabia, Iran, Uzbekistan, and China, which means the countries such as Afghanistan and Pakistan rank better than Egypt in terms of restrictions on religion. According to the same report, Egypt ranks number 12 among the worst countries in the world to exercise sectarian violence against religious minorities. The U.S. Religious Freedom Report has placed Egypt in the watch list, and we are making effort to persuade the Commission to place Egypt among the countries of particular concern, I mean dangerous countries in regards to status of religious minorities. President Mubarak was aware of the public fury against his corrupt regime, and in an effort to maintain his lasting rule, he sought to offer the people an outlet for their boiling anger, and to shift their focus away from the problem-ridden regime through manipulation of the hatred-inspiring triangle consisting of education curriculum, the media, and the religious speech. He managed to direct the public hatred and aggression toward three convenient targets: Israel, the United States, and the Copts. While the common citizen can't reach or touch Israel and the United States except through verbal assault or by exporting terrorism, he can easily use violence against his Coptic neighbor. It's no wonder then that about one-third of the world terrorists came from Egypt, and the most of the terrorist leaders and ideologists also came from Egypt. Egypt, along with Saudi Arabia and Pakistan and Iran, are the primary centers for international Islamism and for breeding Islamic terrorism internationally. After more than three decades, of applying a policy that promotes Islamic extremism in Egypt, extremism has reached the heart of the state institutions, as many extremists are currently holding leading positions in law enforcement, state security, and intelligence agencies, as well as the judiciary, legislative council, and other state institutions. Thus, the crimes committed against the Copts, rather than being criminals acts committed by Islamic extremists, have turned into state crimes, which are, in part, the work of various Egyptian state institutions. The crimes committed against the Copts should, in reality, be classified as state crimes. From an international law perspective, organized persecution, ongoing killing, rape, and intimidation constitute crimes against humanity. The Copts are victims of state crimes and crimes against humanity that have no status of limitations. During President Mubarak's reign, the Copts were subjected more than 1,500 attacks that includes 240 major assaults. Thousands were killed and injured during those attacks, and the loss of properties which were either ransacked or destroyed amounts to hundreds of millions of dollars. The Copts received neither justice nor compensation for any of those incidents. As in most cases, the aggressors were acquitted and the remaining few received only life sentence. During President Mubarak's reign, Coptic girls, including minors, were victims of hundreds of rape incidents and were forced to convert to Islam. Not a single one of those rapists and the kidnappers was ever persecuted. Copts are totally excluded from sovereign decision-making institutions such as the National Security Council, the Supreme Council of Armed Forces, the Police Supreme Council, the Judicial Supreme Council, the President Advisors, and so on. There isn't a single Copt in the security agencies that are vital to the Egyptian state security and intelligence requirements, such as General Intelligence Service, State Security Investigations, Military Intelligence, Presidential Intelligence, Presidential Guard, Army Commanders, Security Director, and so on. There is only one elected Copt member among 444 members of the current parliament. We have yet to find a single Copt university president, and Copts are not allowed to hold the position of professor of obstetrics and gynecology in all Egyptian universities. Copts hold 1 to 2% of all diplomatic and judicial position, so they represent around 15% of the population of Egyptian according to Coptic estimates, or 10% only according to President Mubarak's statements to Washington Post. A presidential decree is required to build a church, and a regional governor's decision is required for an action as simple as fixing or renovation washroom. The state does not maintain a neutral position when dealing with religious conversion. It makes it extremely easy for a Copt who wishes to convert to Islam, while a Muslim who wishes to change his religion is actually risking his life and is subject to incarceration and torture. Copts are not allowed to be part of decision-making institutions in Egypt because the antagonistic policies against the Copts are being designed within those institutions. We perceive that the persecution and discrimination against the Copts is planned, sanctioned, methodological, and ongoing process that started in 1952 and grew considerably with the emergence of Islamic fundamentalism in the last three decades. Ladies and gentlemen, on Christmas Eve, Omar Farouk failed to blow up an airplane headed to Detroit, but the same Islamic terrorism managed to kill six Copts in Nagya Hammadi, Upper Egypt, as they were leaving church on Christmas Eve. The Copts are facing the same terrorism that the United States faced on September 11, and that London, Madrid, Moscow, Bali, Bombay, and Tel Aviv have faced as well. The difference is that the Copts have been subjected to Islamic terrorism for decades and at the hands of the state itself. In recent years, the gap existing between the regime and the Copts and between the Muslims and the Copts high widened. The Copts have lost confidence in the institutions of the Egyptian state and believe that they are part of the problem instead of being part of the solution. The Copts support the international war on terrorism, while most Muslims consider it war against Islam and against Muslim countries. The Copts support the separation of religion and states, while the Muslims consider that its integration of the two is in compliance with the teaching of Islam, which, from their perspective, is both religion and the political state or political entity. The Copts have a strong, supportive, and positive attitude towards the United States, while most Muslims profess to the U.S. to hate the U.S. The Copts would like Egypt to be concerned only with Egyptian issues and problems, while the Muslims believe that Egypt has to play a major role in helping Arabs and Muslims. The Copts support peace with Israel and want to put an end to the prevailing antagonism, given that the previously occupied Egyptian territories were fully returned to Egypt. On the other hand, the national security agencies, along with the Muslim mainstream, perceive Israel as a number one enemy of Egypt and a number one enemy of Islam. Let me end by saying that reinforcing the status of Copts in Egypt also serves the Western, American, and Jewish interests, because it's the Coptic body in Egypt that is striving to prevent Egypt from becoming an Islamic militant jihadist country opposed to the West and hostile to Israel. We are calling on the free countries of the world to assist us in our struggle to achieve our rights in Egypt and to put pressure on Mubarak's regime to end the persecution we had been enduring for decades. Thank you for your attention. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Khalil. As someone who follows these issues, the Coptic persecutions, closely, I can also attest to what you've said and the accuracy of it. I'd like to just ask you a question that many people often ask me, however, whenever I discuss the same issues. And it's basically, a lot of people will say that, yes, maybe the Mubarak regime is bad and is partially or even wholly or to whatever degree responsible for the Coptic persecutions and such. But if the Mubarak regime goes, so the argument goes, the people who argue this, if the Mubarak regime goes, what will the replacement be? Most people say if the Mubarak regime goes, it will be, in fact, the Muslim Brotherhood who would make the cops' life truly a living hell. And so how would you respond to that, which is basically the argument is that the Mubarak regime is bad, but if it goes, it won't get better. In fact, it might get worse.
In my opinion, I refuse the both options, Mubarak regime and Muslim Brotherhood as well. The Muslim Brotherhood is the bad alternative of Mubarak regime, but we're looking for the third way to promote democracy, to transparency, religious freedom, freedoms. We need pressure from United States to reform Egypt, not to support Mubarak or to allow Muslim Brotherhood to be in the top of authority. No. We refused the Muslim Brotherhood because Muslim Brotherhood worse than Mubarak regime. But we're looking for something like Mohammed al-Baradei. There is an alternative. But Mubarak regime itself, he closed everything. He just to show the for the West that the alternative is the Muslim Brotherhood. There is another alternative. Liberals, parties, Democratic Front Party. There is an alternative in Egypt, but Mubarak prevent the all alternative. He just allowed Muslim Brotherhood to be in the picture in front of the West.
Mm-hmm. Well, I completely agree with you, and I think in this sense, what we can say is that the Coptic people are actually the best hope for Egypt of reform and of bringing secularism and more freedom, because they're the ones who are really the representatives of that. And in fact, helping them would help bring about reform and secularism and democracy. So I do agree with you that I think in many ways Mubarak does actually use the Muslim Brotherhood to his advantage. Why don't we start taking calls, questions?
Ladies and gentlemen, to join the question and answer session queue, press star 1 on your telephone keypad. I will announce each caller prior to bringing you into the conference. And please remember that if you have your phone on mute, take it off mute when you are selected to ask your question. So again, to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad right now.
And one more, while we wait, one more question to you, Megdi, which is basically, I think that because the Copts, as you've pointed out, have been under sort of suppression and persecution for, 1,400 years, that there may be some sort of, among the older generation, this mentality that it's okay for them to suffer this. They've grown up with this mentality, where the newer generation, especially those of the diaspora who live in America and the West, are the ones who are spearheading this, which has always been something of an irony. If you'd like to comment on that.
No, I refuse this because we are suffering through the last 14 centuries after invasion of Omar ibn al-As to Egypt. No, but at the same time, before 1952, it's the liberal era. It's the position of Copts was very good, and they participated strongly in political game, and there was more than 15% in parliament. We don't want to judge the history, the whole history. Now we are in the human rights era, so we need to our rights according to the human rights resolutions. It's not we consider the 1952 is the persecution, the modern persecution started in 1952 and raised with the fundamentalism era. We under now Islamic fundamentalism era now. So we face the fundamentalism. We faced the Islamic fundamentalism before United States faced in 9/11. Mm-hmm. So we stopped from the last four decades, because the last four decades is a woke up of Islamic terrorism.
We have a question from the line of Mr. Bob Gazzardi. Go ahead with your question, please.
I was in Israel a number of years ago, and we met with some of the Coptics, and we were instructed in the most severe terms not to discuss politics at all. And I'm wondering, given that, whether there's really any hope at all, because this issue really can't be discussed because of the fear of retaliation. And I was wondering if you could comment on what an American can do without jeopardizing cops in Egypt themselves.
Thank you, sir. I think we now encourage the cops to involve in a political game and to involve in political parties in Egypt. But they went to churches because they face persecution, severe persecution through Mubarak and Sadat era. So they forced it to go inside the churches and to stop practice in politics. Now we invite people, we invite our people in Egypt and outside to participate strongly in political parties and to in human rights aspects.
Thank you very much.
And ladies and gentlemen, to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad.
Megdi, what do you think has to be done? Is it just a matter of bringing more awareness to Americans and to the West of what's going on? Because obviously the sort of things that happens to the cops that you've pointed out in your speech, if they were happening, if people knew about this, for example, how the girls are constantly being abducted and raped and impregnated and forced to convert to Islam, I think a lot of people be more concerned and want to help. So I think the problem is people just don't know. So what thoughts do you have on bringing the Coptic issue to a bigger audience so they understand what's going on?
Yes. Because we didn't have a lot of experience, like the gentleman said before, we didn't have a lot of experience in politics. We need support from Americans, from Jewish here to support us, the think tanks, Jewish think tanks, also to put our cause in your agenda, in the Jewish think tanks agenda, to invite us to speak, to write about our cause, to speak also with the Congress and Senate to support the Copts in Egypt, because the Copts, as I said, It's American and the Jewish interests also to support Copts in Egypt, because Copts of Egypt, I said, they prevent jihadists to control Egypt. The civil it's a big minority and the biggest minority under Islamic regimes, the biggest minority around the world in Islamic countries. So we need support. We need pressure in Mubarak regime to stop persecuting us, to give us a chance to participate in high-ranking level of institutions in Egypt.
We have a question from the line of Ms. Margot Einstein. Go ahead with your question, please.
Thank you so much, Mr. Khalil. It was very, very powerful. Are there any other groups in Egypt that could work with the Copts to strengthen or bring democracy to Egypt? And are there specific Coptic leaders who would lead the way to help in this cause?
Thank you, ma'am. I invite you to join us, to work with us. I have executive director of think tank in Egypt, the Middle East Freedom Forum. We invite you to speak in front of our audience in Egypt to share with us in our struggle to promote democracy and the freedoms for all Egyptians. More than welcome in our think tank in Egypt.
Okay. Thank you, Megdi. Some of the more other aspects of the situation, which I especially wanted to talk about, is what helped, what brought all this to the fore now. In other words, usually the oppression in Egypt on the Copts and the persecution is constant. But I think what has helped bring it to the fore now is what happened that you mentioned on Christmas Eve with the killing of the six Copts who were just leaving church, and they were just randomly killed. Can you speak a little about that in more detail?
In more details, I consider this Naga Hammadi in Christmas Eve is a state crime. It's not the people. They are arrested three people. They arrested three people as killers. But the killers, that's it's a tool. Behind this killers, it's state crime, state and state security intelligences. I said before, this is a state crime, and it's not the killer is not the main killer. So we call the Egyptian government to open or to bring the real killer. Because these people, it's very peaceful people. After Christmas mass in Christmas Eve, they killed in front of the three churches in Egypt. Means it's planned to kill these people. And the Egyptian government just arrested the killer. But we know that behind this crime, it's a state security. And we called President Mubarak to bring the real killer to justice.
Yes, and I think what most proves what you're saying is the fact that whenever whenever a Muslim kills or attacks Christians, it takes, and then the police are called immediately. It usually takes the police several hours sometimes to get there. And
yes,
I know there's a lot of documentation about that. For example, also with the attacks on the monasteries and the raids, and I think that especially proves your point that the state is behind this, the way that, and also that they don't arrest them, or if they do arrest them, they're not prosecuted. So I think if someone does explore it the way that you're pointing out, the connection is made between the state and the Islamists.
Yes, it's a very strong connection between state and the Islamists in Egypt. They are brothers in Egypt. We are the same face of the same coin. The other face of the same coin.
Okay, thank you very much for joining us again today, Mr. Khalil. This was very enlightening, and hope you can join us again sometime soon.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Raymond. Thank you so much. Thank you for inviting me again. Thank you.
Okay.